The Iraqi battle was organized there. You had the first agreement between Gorbachev and Bush and Thatcher to implement UN sanctions that hadn't been attempted since 1956 and the Suez Canal crisis. The ignoring of private individual national sovereignty and just the imposing of world government structure as an accepted guaranteed environment. And that's what's happening now. Nobody's questioning the world government structure. We're seeing intermedia right now.
Right.
Now, that's within the 1990 to 2020 lockdown Bob Rule mythic government. The mythic government is the structure of the myth of world government, United Nations, ersatz environment. That old environment, which is a myth in itself, is one of the aspects of mythic government warfare. Only one. You're not getting any of the Challenger or space shuttles off the ground. The solar government's still having its battle, too. So mythic government warfare is multi-level between solar government, universal government, and world government. You get that? So don't worry about 1992.
Well, I was thinking about the removal of the Berlin Wall, the political and economic reforms of the USSR, and the reunification of Germany, and how we're becoming more and more an integrated media environment and electric environment, and global village, etc.
Yeah, we're at fault for that because the Pinks, we're letting the Pinks feel the need for human scale, and the human scale is now on the level of the solar system. We feel that our neighborhood is threatened, our neighborhood being the planet within the solar government structure. So we're suffering the Pink consensus to merge and accept these things without any kind of, reservations, all right? There are private subgenius reservations about this, but these are puny compared to the effect of acceptance of whatever the heck I was just talking about.
Oh, I'm a like Big Brother.
I just conked out. I don't even know what I've... I'm sorry. I hope you got that on tape. That's the end of the call. Thanks.
All right.
Okay, good night. All right, sorry, Bob.
I just blew up.
Yeah, you just woke up out of your trance, and I thought because of that, maybe we should go to another call. We've got a couple of people who have been waiting...
Thanks.
Very patiently. One of them is Tom, I know, and so I think we should go to Tom. We always treasure Tom's calls. And we've got another call after that. So
tell me when Pat's leaving. I just want to say goodbye to him.
Oh, yeah. Pat'll be around. So let's go right to another call. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 in Toronto, the Church of the Subgenius. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
What's up?
I don't know,
Tom. Are you there?
Yeah.
Bob, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I'm here, then.
Well, Bob, we're on our way to the White House.
That's guaranteed?
That's guaranteed.
How can we talk about this without giving away our confidentiality? This is true what Tom is saying.
Well, all I can say is that we understand that we've been able to infiltrate in there.
And this is true, Mike.
And what's interesting is the report that we wrote was used as a great reverse barometer.
Do you want to explain that?
Just as our fears were... Just as we feared, but we did see the way at which it was worked. We wrote the report with regard to the Hussein...
Why don't you back up and introduce it? Do it chronologically. This is a very important fact. This did happen.
Well...
A little more detail how...
Well, without giving any details, basically...
We were asked by the White House indirectly to give a consultation on how to
properly structure the
George Bush's videotape to Iraq.
That's right.
All right. So we knew that they would take our knowledge, which they didn't have.
Well, no, we didn't realize it until after the fact, right?
Oh, well, come on now, Tom. You're going to admit that?
Well, I have to bend it a little bit.
Okay.
So, I can't give myself too much credit.
Okay, but
I don't know. I think I realized it subconsciously, but I
can give myself credit.
Yeah, you realized it before I did.
Yeah, and the point is your own.
That's why you're on the show, not me.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I'm MC.
That's right. You're MC.
That's the first part of McLuhan, right? MC.
That's
Looney.
Right.
Looney.
That's right.
Give us a clue.
Yeah,
okay,
right.
So Master of Ceremonies, anyways, from
that point... Well, anyway, the bottom line was...
No, Tom, I feel like you're going off here. Let me just say this, that we knew, I knew, and you felt it subconsciously, that Bush was going to take our information and do the exact opposite because we wanted to create some kind of resonant media ecological harmony in his communication to the Iraqis. But we knew he did not intend that. So he took the opposite. But he needed to know what to do, from our point of view, to go to the opposite, right?
That's right, Bob.
And he did it.
That's right.
Now, I had a private session with the Exus the other day, and this is what they told me. They told me, and we didn't have access to Bush when he watched it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He watched it, and some aide who didn't even consider it important to watch the reaction of the Iraqis to Bush's tape was interrupting Bush, and Bush told him to shut up because he was following what the Iraqis were doing in reacting to his tape. And he said, they said this, you know, they complained about that aspect of the tape, and this, they listed off their grievances towards his tape content. And he goes, as he's watching, the exes confirm this, he goes, I knew they'd say that. Yeah, I knew they'd say that. He just ticked it off one by one. He expected every one of the responses, which is what we thought he would use our videotape for.
Right.
I mean, cause I have to wait. I'm just getting distracted. Pat from Ottawa is going, thanks. I don't know what to say, man. Good stuff? Yeah, Spritzer. Thank you. Okay, Tom. So, yeah, we knew he'd react. He wanted the videotape to backfire.
That's right, and of course we tailored it according to our principles.
That's right. Well, media ecological principles.
That's right.
Because we're true to the subgenius tradition of telling the truth.
Well, that's it, and of course a lot of your listeners perhaps listen to you now and then and think that the contacts and the infrastructure that you have beneath you is just your own fabrication, but I'm here to tell you that it's not.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, how can we impress upon this as true? Now, there are, they are still...
Well, I mean, there's no need to. I mean, the medium is the message, but...
But I think we could...
And that should imply it, but I think that...
New developments, they are going to keep in touch with us. They still want our knowledge so that they can do the opposite, right? And that's why you're saying we are going back to the White House?
That's correct.
And you've got the word, it's office has been set up, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Now, Mike, I want Mike to realize this. I'm not making this up, Mike. You are going to have photo evidence of Bob at the White House doing his work.
November 91.
Bob, you know
we've
it.
Got a big function there, and Bob will be there.
November 91.
You know, of all people, I'm the last person not to believe you.
I keep forgetting, Mike, he was converted about a year ago, and... So Kent comes in. He's surprised. Maybe Kent's got input. You understand this, Kent? Do you believe it?
Well.
Okay, Tom.
Bob, I just want to mention once again.
Yeah.
Before, since we have a minute here, I'm going away for 3 weeks. But I do want to say this, that there was within this Iran-Iraq issue, once again, we were able to see between the images, and what we've been, a pattern which we foresaw long ago started to be revealed more and more, and that is, and I hate to come back to it, but these things are benchmarks, just like the Battle of the Harvest Moon is a benchmark,
yeah.
And that is the downing of the space shuttle by French intelligence and the housing of Baby Doc in France. What we've learned more and more is that it was in response. The shooting down of the space shuttle by particle beam weapons was in response to what we've now learned is the French motive was that the Americans had been, quote, monkeying around and sabotaging the Ariane rocket.
Ah.
And so the motive is there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Americans didn't want, well, the Americans aren't the right term, but the NASA and the group around it, that Rockefeller group, did not want the Ariane missile to be successful so that they could go into competition. It's the old story. The corner grocery store down the street doesn't want some other grocery store in the arena.
Yeah.
And so they sabotaged the food, and they downed the Ariane rockets and did sabotage them. And as you recall, we did go back, and now that we know that, we've found evidence of that. And
what is the evidence? I know George mentioned about 2 months ago seen the investigation of a conspiratorial blowing up, an attitude that the Ariane rockets were blown up as a conspiracy.
And LaRouche has been reporting more and more about it.
Oh, is he covering that?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so these Ariane rockets were downed and were sabotaged in various ways, and the French knew it and decided they were going to put an end to it, and very, very quickly.
Is LaRouche saying that the Challenger was blown up by the French?
Well, he isn't saying it straightforward like that, point blank. But certainly if you read between the lines and you see this story juxtaposed against that story, I mean, the implication is there.
The process pattern. The first caller was talking about LaRouche. What would you say is the value or even disservice of LaRouche? You're an expert in that area. You've studied LaRouche for years.
Well, the disservice of LaRouche is... You mean my criticism of LaRouche?
Yeah, what...
I think LaRouche has a particular... can be used to a great advantage, but also one must keep in mind where he's coming from and what his political bent is.
And what's that?
Well, I don't think there are the I think that LaRouche is. Everybody must realize that Mr. LaRouche is an American Solzhenitsyn. He's a political prisoner, and as a political prisoner, it means that some of what he's saying is true, but likewise, some of what he's saying is based on his own world, which he's created for himself, and to that degree, it's based on his own particular bias. Now,
would you say he's used by the Vatican?
Well, you're saying that, and I want to be very careful of the labels I use.
Yeah.
Because, obsolescence is obsolete, right, Bob?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't really. That's an elephant trap that you were mentioning before.
Yeah.
But I do think that Mr. LaRouche has certain backers which are using him as a useful fool as much as he sees other people being used as that.
Yeah.
And he's right, and yet he's wrong. But I do think that between the lines, what he says, there is an ability for we media ecologists to get a handle on seeing through the mud.
Yes,
and LaRouche can be used to that degree. It's an excellent. Provides an excellent source to juxtapose against the regular bilge that we see in our present day media.
Right, because only through his sources of covering the international press services would you be able to get a juxtaposition of information to see the pattern of what happened to Space Shuttle. That's a service he provides.
Oh, that's right. There are great services that he provides. And there are disservices, but you ignore the disservices, and so I really don't want to comment on them. However, I do want to say that I am very neutral when it comes to LaRouche. He's very useful. I'm not a great follower or fan of his.
Well, did you hear the quote?
He can be very useful, and to go into an explanation of the disservices is just not, there are disservices, but the key is just to ignore those and to look at the positive things that he has to say.
Well, one of the quotes here, I told you about this guy who has sent in some quotes here from various books, and one of them is, "I'm free at last to embrace all things, be fully affected by all things." So the true subgenius would be able to embrace LaRouche as much as William Irwin Thompson.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, is there anything else you wanted to go into?
I think that's pretty well it. I like to come back to the basics, and to extend things into new realms is difficult to do on this medium. However, I just say that the Anglo-American establishment is very successfully, it appears, creating the disease in order to offer the cure.
Yeah.
And I guess the Queen is going to be selling Buckingham Palace and moving to the Temple Mount.
and
some long-range forecast, Bob.
That's not bad. You see, the Queen was in the headlines today. Mulroney had to go to the Queen, reveal a bit of the layers of the onion to...
Well, to get to that forum, there is one thing I do want to say.
Yeah?
And that is that I think that it would be nice if Canadians were to reflect about the nature of democracy, if you want to move within that label.
Yeah.
And just think about the fact that today, under electric conditions, everything flips.
Yeah.
The elected official is non-democratic.
Yeah.
And the appointed official is democratic.
Ah.
And the reason that happens is because the elected official must get re-elected, and therefore he's able to be bought off by the construction companies and the liquor companies and all the other big corporations. So the elected official today is no longer, quote, the democratic man. He's the anti-democratic man.
Autocratic.
However, the appointed man, he now has a role to play. He's in touch with the electric environment. He doesn't need to be reelected, and therefore, no matter who comes and offers him a bribe, he doesn't care. He is going to play his role, and he's going to support the principles that were established in 1867. What I'm saying is that under electric conditions, the Senate is a far more democratic body than the House of Commons, because they don't need to be reelected. And yet Mr. Mulroney and the press and the media and the television and the satellite TVs all use this myth, this big myth that's embedded in the subconscious of the entire population, trying to, and they wake it up and say they're not elected and therefore they shouldn't have any say. And yet the real funny thing about it is that the appointed official is really far more democratic than, and is more a judge and able to make the decisions for us than is the House of Commons.
Yeah, he's the ombudsman.
That's right, he's the ombudsman.
Yeah, the ombudsman.
And with that, Bob, I say good night and good luck.
Well, Tom,
and
you
Bob,
both...
I just wanted to tell you that earlier this week, McLuhan was on Annie Hall. He came out and said his fallacy was wrong at 10:22 on TV.
You noted that.
I noted that.
Yeah, Mike mentioned that. Tom, I just want to say that last pattern, even Mike got it. He nodded when you talked about those flip points. That's one of your most profound patterns you've added to the show. I thank you a lot.
I'll see you when I get back, Bob, from Washington.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Not bad.
Yeah, always good.
Good resonant effect there on the sound.
Yeah, boy, the... A lot of calls tonight, so I just want to say to anyone who's calling, just to be patient, and, you know, when Kent picks up the phone and puts you on hold, it may be for a long time, but let's try to keep up the pace if we can. I mean, I know Tom's sort of an exception, and what Tom says tends to be
He's postgraduate.
Cherished.
He's a postgraduate.
He's allowed.
Yeah, and also, maybe we can diminish some of these calls by saying, don't forget the pledge in a couple of weeks. Maybe the lights will go down again.
That's right. It's about 10 minutes after 1 o'clock. We've got another 50 minutes on this show. Let's go to another call.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, CKLM.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
That's good.
Okay.
This is the first time I've listened to your show. A friend of mine told me about it.
How did he describe it? How did your friend describe it?
He described it as trickery.
Trickery. Okay.
But in a good sense, not in a
not malicious.
Negative way.
Positive trickery.
Yeah. Yeah, not
very
malicious.
Positive thing.
Yeah. Okay, great.
I wanted to talk to you about a few things. One was, I was listening to your show earlier this evening, and you said something about somebody being subgenius. Or million, or thousands of people being subgenius.
Millions,
2.2 million.
Yeah. Well, what is subgenius as opposed to genius?
You see,
we shouldn't laugh. We have to take into account that we do get new callers and new people who... Imagine if you just tuned in for the first time, and I think...
Yeah, exactly. That's
your situation.
I'm laughing with glee at the listeners who've been waiting for a virgin. There's people who've been listening to this show for several years. They've been waiting for a virgin. Now they're going to say, how's Bob going to explain
it? Yeah, I'm sure David is howling right now.
You know who David is?
Yeah.
Okay, subgenius is a term coined by Reverend Stang, and there's a book out called The Book of the Subgenius.
Mm-hmm.
And he defines a subgenius as not genius because his is crude and redneck in his attitude. He says no genius has ever benefited anybody. All right, that's his simple strategy, simple explanation. But that's not our strategy, you see, because Reverend Stang is diluting my work, and he uses my files, and therefore he has an inadequate explanation of what the subgenius is. Basically, what a subgenius is today is the approach of the media ecological role player, the advocate of media ecology. In other words, we study the effects of technologies rather than implementing new environments and new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the genius will invent new technologies, right?
Right.
So the subgenius is looking at the effects of the genius.
Ooh,
work. You never heard that before, right?
Well, it's
a percept for you. Great. The guy came right on the radio. I love that. Eureka.
Yeah,
you must be a subgenius because it didn't take me long for you to get it.
Well, it's
the subterranean region of the genius, the effects are what we study, the church of the subgenius. We're the hidden ground for the genius. Now, we don't advocate a Luddite attitude of stopping technological evolution. That's going to happen no matter what, okay? It's man's work. You know, man is a generic term for everybody, right? Human beings' work is technology. Man is language. We regard all technologies as linguistic. All right, the problem is we're at the point now with software, electric environment overkill, that we need to determine when a new environment should be brought in, what is its effect on all the previous technological environments, because we have a watershed, a clogged up effect, a backlog of technologies. And this is a complex structure which we analyze using the tetrad. You ever heard of the tetrad? Ever heard of the tetrad?
No.
Okay, the tetrad, you know, you have the dyad, the triad, and then the tetrad, a four-part structure.
Yes.
Yeah, now
yeah,
you,
okay, right.
You look in this next week, you know this magazine, THIS, have you seen
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Okay, they got a new issue coming out. It's out to subscribers. It'll be on the stand this week or next week, I imagine. The September issue, you'll see an article on Mike and I and Connie in
mm-hmm.
there, okay, on this show. In it, there's a picture of Connie and I, and Connie is holding a book called Laws of Media. The cover.
Right.
And the cover of the book is by Marshall McLuhan. He's the founder, inventor, subgenius archetype, architect of the tetrad.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get and study the tetrad, just get a copy of Laws of Media.
Uh-huh.
Now, we call that bottom-up analysis. The bottom-up means the reality we all share as human beings. But we have a pink power structure that's imposed on us bureaucratically. It's a bureaucratically hijacked mankind in the global theater, all right? Now, for studying that, some people call it conspiracy, but we call it top-down structure.
Conspiracy?
Is that a funny word?
Well, it's so vast.
Yeah, and so is bureaucracy.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And we're talking bureaucracy imposes a reality on you. Aside from the reality that we all share, like nobody's imposing... I'm out of trance. I don't know where that thought was going. Forget that. Okay, back. What?
Okay.
Your next statement.
Okay, well, that's a good way to end that.
Yeah.
There's something I wanted to read to you.
Great.
Here. And,
How do your mother listen?
This is it.
I think his mother probably wasn't aware.
Old years, 5 year when, head, have a, you think you do. Years, 5 for this, for waiting, been had I, trans and was I. Began travel, balance, ears uncurved, my off bouncing, a voice, been have might, there think I, recreation was this, bath, no, this was ward out, gazing eyes, virgin, sensation of such, experienced I, time first, the, was it stimulating, bed, my wedding, unlike completely, fresh was something. Foreign was something.
Okay, that's it?
Yeah.
Okay, now, you know what they, you've invented something. You've made a software statement. That's a new invention. I'm going to give you the subgenius response, the hidden ground of that. The bias in your collage is English. I don't think I heard one foreign language from English's point of view.
Oh, no. Yeah, that...
All right?
Yeah.
Now, that's appropriate if you're speaking to an English-speaking audience, but under radio conditions, you're speaking to many linguistic ethnic groups here.
Mm-hmm.
So have you consciously targeted your poem, your message, to an English audience?
Not consciously, no.
Yeah, because that's...
Not anything, really.
That's the art of tetrad is the art of rhetoric. You target your audience, or you have a good understanding of the effect you want to have on the audience. So that was your statement was an amateurish, and I don't mean this...
Okay,
condemnation.
Now listen, that was the word I was waiting for.
Okay.
Now listen.
I'm ready.
You said amateurish.
Yeah.
Amateurish.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
I'll say it, amateurish.
Now listen to this.
All right.
Something, okay, let's see here. Do you think you have a head when you're 5 years old? Something was foreign, something was fresh, completely unlike wetting my bed. Stimulating it was, the first time I had experienced such a sensation. Virgin eyes gazing outward. This was no bath, this was recreation. I think there might have been a voice bouncing off my unpierced ears. Unbalanced, travel began. I was in trance. I had been waiting for this for 5 years.
Under radio conditions. Not bad. That's what you were reading from.
That's what I was reading from in the reverse.
Yeah, so I would say that, see, it wasn't English. Then you cut it up. You broke it up.
Oh, it wasn't cut up or broke up at all. It was just read word by word backwards.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
It was backwards?
Yeah.
All right. Well, it sounded... I thought you opened up with the head in the 5 years. I thought that was at the beginning of also your first phase, the first thing you did. Wasn't
well,
that the first?
Well, that's because I read the end at the beginning.
You read the end at the beginning.
Right.
Does that make sense, Mike? Yeah, you're lying. You're trying to trick me.
No, I'm not. Honest. Yeah.
How could you read the... Oh, you mean you the second time you read the end at the beginning?
Okay, the first time I read it, I said, old ears five, year when. That was the first line.
Okay, now read the first line of what you have in front of you.
Do you think you have a head when you're 5 years old?
And read the last line of what you have in front of you.
When you're 5 years old.
And what did you just say you read the first time?
Do you think you have a head when you're 5 years old?
That was what you said. That was the last line.
No, that was the first line the second time.
No. Mike agrees. I think you're playing around here.
No, it isn't.
Okay, let me tell you something else. Another inappropriate thing is that you're reading from a visual piece of paper.
Right.
That's not appropriate for an acoustic medium. But you can't prove to us that you're right.
I didn't realize that I had to prove something.
Well, it came to this point where we seem to disagree perceptually of what you're doing here.
Oh, well, that's okay, too, I guess.
Yes.
That's not a bad thing.
That's healthy.
That's healthy.
Yeah,
But we do try to maintain an even keel within the healthy diversity, right? Both are healthy.
Okay, the possibility of the words being mumbled, jumbled, and mixed up is, you know, here relevant. But the whole idea was that I just simply read something backwards in a generalized kind of way, and then you talked about it and mentioned that it was amateurish and, you know, like young and kind of virgin.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it. But that was the whole, when I wrote this thing, it was...
You intended
it was
that.
Definitely a virgin kind of thing. You know?
Okay, but see, you're making up these explanations now. You should have answered that and said that when I first asked you what are the effects you were trying to create. So you're just trying to play catch-up with your own perception here.
I'm just having a good time.
We're trying to have a good time, but we can still be hard-edged and perceptive about our good time, right? I mean, you know, we live in the interval. When you're having a good time, you're also thinking of bad things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way life is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right?
That's
when you're making love to your lover, you're not just concentrating or thinking of the ecstasy or the pleasure. You got all kinds of painful memories or whatever goes through you happening at the same time.
At the time that you're actually making love?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You never felt that? Mike knows he's felt that.
At different times, but not a consistent thing, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that flips. This is the paradox of the interval. Whatever I describe as the characteristics of the interval does not maintain its characteristics.
Uh-huh.
In other words, you can make love and feel good and not even have any negative feelings.
Yeah, that's a true thing.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. Mike said we got five other callers.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for the call, and I don't mean to be hard-edged at all.
No, you're not at all.
No. Okay. We don't mean anything we say here. I thought that your work was profound.
Well, it was just an exercise, therapy thing, and it was good.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you,
Bye.
Felt it.
Hello? There we are. Can you hear me now? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. More calls, yeah. Sorry.
Well, what happened to the lineup?
Well, they're there.
Oh, you wanted to say something?
Well, yeah.
Okay, take a breather, callers. Just hold on. But Mike's going to do something.
No, I'm not going to. It's a dense show. I just wanted to catch up. But it's good to have all these first-time callers, isn't it?
Have we had several?
Well, we had the one, the two.
Two virgins.
First-time callers, yeah.
Did I read part four?
I find when I make love, I listen to Wayne. I think of Wayne Gretzky a lot.
See, you're putting us on, Mike.
I know.
Or is this true?
That was very Burrow-esque with that last caller. Brian Dyson, that whole,
But that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I know.
But see, each generation's got to replay the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, right? They're going to go through those phases. And you think of Wayne Gretzky, you really do?
Wayne Gretzky or Pele, the famous soccer player?
You see, you're not being honest, Mike. I don't believe you do. I know what you think about it. You don't want me to talk about it.
Let's go to another call.
You don't want me to talk about your mother, do you, Mike?
You're listening to CKLN 88.1 in Toronto. It's nearly fundraising time. Save up your money for fundraising. What's the date for our fundraising?
The 19th, I think.
19th of October, 1990, and another
year. No, the 12th is this Friday, the 17th.
17th, okay. Yeah. So be prepared. And across from me is J.R. Bob Dobbs. We're in Studio 2 tonight. The number here is 595-147879 or 595-1655.
Think about your mother, don't you, Mike?
Hello, CKLN.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about a few things that Bob mentioned earlier.
Thanks.
With respect to technology.
Yeah.
And now you mentioned some document, which I haven't read, that suggests that we need 10 billion people on the Earth. And
The new Federalist magazine.
Right. And I guess what disturbs me about that is, I mean, now you mentioned later in the program that you're not a Luddite, and you more analyze the technology rather than bring about new technology.
Yeah.
I guess what disturbs me is that, starting with, as far as I know, Francis Bacon, there's this concept of technology where we hold nature by the throat. And it's nature vexata, trying to get information from nature by force. And that's something that bothers me. The other thing that bothers me is what technology does to the human mind, now depending on how you define technology. But, I don't know if you've addressed, I've listened to your show for a while, I don't know if you've addressed that in the past or not, but it's something that, I don't know if you want to address it now or maybe you just want to think about it or whatever, but it's, I guess it's these ideas of that the world is here for us, meaning human beings, period. And there's no consideration given to any other living creature on the planet. Therefore, we can have 10 billion people on the planet. It's just a matter of getting the right technology and learning how to extract resources properly. And yet, there is nobody looks at the cost in terms of other living beings beyond humans. And I guess that's something that just... That bothers me quite deeply. But anyway, I don't know if you ever addressed that. But.
I'll tell you that I address that statement you've made, that mouthful, constantly. You see, there's many levels of the dilemma you've evoked there. Would your father agree with you on that? Is he bothered like you are?
No, I don't think so.
All right, so there's a difference between you and your father.
Sure.
And do you know that what you're bothered by is an effect of the software environment? That's the shape that your generation has been made into by software electric technologies. Your father, maybe the grandfather, was molded by hardware technology, beginning with the hardware revolution of Gutenberg and Francis Bacon. Yes, you intensified the isolation and alienation from the original nature. Now, the electric environment brings back a merging with the original nature, regarding it almost as a divine animal, a sacred being, to an extreme, so that your basic mental propensities and sympathies is a bias. Now, I'm not saying that bias is wrong. We may need that bias now to deal with the disservices of the hard-edged technological drive of the last 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you that the oligarchs who use the tetrad embrace both modalities. They use both. Did you see Prince Charles on Adrian Clarkson last week?
I don't watch TV, but I've read about him through the newspaper about what he, that's the thing that he advocates.
He advocates exactly what you seem to advocate in your sympathies there, okay?
Roughly.
Yeah,
sure.
And his family made huge profits off the hardware.
Right.
The destruction over the last 400 years.
Sure, absolutely.
Why is he flipping into the opposite point of view?
I don't know. You give a lot of explanations for that. Liberal guilt? I don't know.
Right. It could be many explanations. The point is that it's resonating with the software sympathies of people all around the world, which you've expressed. So this is a zeitgeist, a mood at this time. Now, every mood of the historical phases of mood mud that humanity's gone through has a bias. This is what Harold Innes meant, the bias of communication, the technological mood. And no society has ever understood the mood its own society generated, never understood the disservices as well as the services. We have to understand this now to get to the point where we can make people who have your attitude feel harmonious.
Right.
So it's a very complex dilemma you've laid out. I've talked about every sentence you said, I've talked about and tried to swallow and get a
a perspective to offer as an agenda for people to rally behind me and have a political movement. And I'm still trying to do it. But I cannot communicate one-level program because you have people in the East who come out of a natural harmonic, relatively harmonic relationship to the Earth more than the Western man. They are now gravitating toward the Western hardware dynamism.
Yeah,
the
I see that happen.
Yeah, and the same time, Western man, hardware-driven, is embracing the new software effect and getting nostalgic for nature again. You've got us flipping on each other.
Now, are you hoping that those are going to converge?
They can't converge because they are incompatible modalities and complementary. So you couldn't merge them and you can't separate them. You've got to dance in the interval with all of them. And that's what the tetrad does. The tetrad is the means of governing. The elites know this stuff, and they are trying to, as best as possible, to modulate these frequencies to a better situation. But the people they're dealing with cannot bring themselves to understand the task they have. So I'm trying to spell out the task that I am dealing with so that the people can understand the complexity of management.
Right.
In other words, the conspiracy is in control, but they don't necessarily want to off themselves. And we're at the point where even they can lose from the motives of their conspiracy. So they've got to turn to a popular image of world government or universal harmony, universal brotherhood. They've got to do this. The technology is so imploded for 150 years that we have to do that now, at this late date. But there will be disservices of this. People won't have any private identity or even tribal identity.
Right.
So what you raise is a question. It's like a friend of mine once said, 20th century man is running down the street saying, I've got the answers, I've got the answers. What are the questions? Now, you just laid out questions as answers, but I think you should put a question mark or a double duty in tarot bang, which is an exclamation mark and a question mark superimposed on it at the same time as you say what you just said.
Oh, and I was doing that.
I hope you were.
Yeah.
And when I listen to the tapes, I'll see if it was, if the tone was in there. But I'll take your word on it.
Yeah, well, anyway, the intention. But the other thing I wanted to say was, now, do you think we can keep going in terms of this, quote, technological progress and opening up all these Pandora's boxes? I mean...
Yes, we can. And we will. And there will be disservices. But when we arrive at fusion within the next 10 years... Fusion energy is going to break a lot of the problems open. It's going to create new problems, but it's going to get us out of this bind we're in now when we're forced to deal with the oil consciousness level. We're going to get out of that. That's going to be it's going to seem like a second coming to people, the free energy we're going to get. But there's going to be all kinds of problems that will be spin-offs of that, but we will be into a new technological ground. And we study the new effects, but it will get us out of this problem that's so obvious to everybody, it has to be obsolete.
So really, my view is you just go from one frying pan into the other frying pan, or however you want to word it, from the frying pan into the fire.
Well,
I mean,
that's the biological metaphor for consciousness itself. I mean, you're going to die. Every moment you're awake, you're going to have to deal with whatever death means to you.
Sure.
And so biology is a metaphor that, eh? The life and time and movement, as our first letter said, it always seems worse now than before. That's the nature of time. We'll call that biology. That experience is the experience of incompleteness, which is part of consciousness. And so we've manifested sociologically an incompleteness, a fear, a paranoia, a collective phobia, a fear of the unknown, which is happens to us privately with birth and death.
Right.
So we're manifesting that existential feeling, which is the eternal moment. I think that's the present moment. It has those characteristics forever.
Right.
And so our society will have that characteristic. We'll always think we screwed up the past a little bit, though we'll celebrate some parts of it. We'll always wonder why we weren't doing the present as well as we could.
No, you can say more than that.
And we'll be apprehensive and hopeful about the future. That is the characteristics of consciousness. And that's metaphorized in nature. So there it is. It's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Well.
Once it's said.
To some degree. One thing I want to do, one last question.
Final question.
You mentioned about... how this generation is, as you said, not so much the hard edge, but the software.
Yeah, that's the discarnate effect of the electric environment, starting with the telegraph and then moving through telephone, radio, and computers, TV, satellite.
So how do you connect with what I said previously to that software generation?
When you talked about the population explosion and the effects of that, or starvation, remember, as we're all imploded discarnately under electric conditions, we feel claustrophobic and we feel as... too many people on the planet. We could fit the whole planet The whole population, 5 billion people in Canada, create media archaeological, to quote Dublin, archaeology, the study of architecture, proper harmonious city relationships. We could build proper city designs, and you could look to LaRouche's writings for the golden section pattern. Golden section is an old archetype symbol. You look at the golden section pattern for building cities. We can make harmonious situations if we got out of the visual space real estate mafia combine that runs the world and keeps us locked into certain areas for real estate values. We bypass that. We could fit the whole world as it is now in Canada. We'd have the rest of the planet to have another 5 billion people. And we'd have, this may be hard to visualize, but Bucky Fuller proved this in the 60s.
Right. No, yeah, and I accept that, but what I'm saying is, ought we even to consider those options? I mean, what right do we have to say that, well, let's see how many people we can cram on the planet. I mean, what about the other life forms out there who need space?
Oh, yeah, that's what we would consider. That's what our ecology would take in consideration, all that stuff. It's not that ecology and the interests of ecology are irrelevant. They are relevant. It's just that they get exaggerated on a certain level due to the electric effect. They deal with the ecology of the old nature. But what about the ecology of our technological environments? See, our technological environments are our new nature. They are things we've got to learn to create spaces for them, just as we have to create spaces for insects or African wildlife. Whatever old nature species and their spaces are, we have to consider new media as new animals that need new spaces. This means an orchestrating of the old nature and the new nature. So pollution probe does not emphasize the disservice or service of the discarnate state. The software experience we're all in. So this is the dilemma, is how to have unity and diversity. And that's a slogan for the World Future Society. The United Nations oligarchs use that. And so that slogan is rearview mirror. It's so obsolete, then it would work. I'm trying to get beyond this dialectic between university and diversity, but I got to deal with it at a certain level. Just like we talk about the world government being locked down, and then the solar government being locked down, the universal government being locked down, and the mythic governments being locked down.
Right.
So everything you said would be taken into account if I was recognized to be ruling as I am.
Right. But you don't see your position as humanist in a negative sense?
No. Oh, I can see that as the disservices of the humanist tradition. Yeah, there are disservices in the humanist tradition, which you seem to be highlighting tonight. I agree with those disservices. I mean, I recognize them.
Right.
But I'm still a humanist, because there's nothing old under the sun. And there's nothing new under the sun. This is a dilemma.
Okay, got to go to more calls.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. That's a very thoughtful statement.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, Bob?
Am I working hard?
Yeah. Yep. I'm just trying to remember who's next. Just these red lights flashing at me all night.
You mean you know who they are?
Well, I don't know who they are, but in order.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'll just, I think it's this call next. You are listening to CKLN. We are stuck in the basement of Ryerson Polytechnical Institute for another 25 minutes, and then you're going to be around. Are you doing this thing? This is taped.
Yeah, this is a tape access interview, 205 till 10 after 3.
Of course, we're taped as well, for that matter.
Yeah, this is
so
taped.
I'm asking you on tape whether your next show will be taped. Let's go to the next caller. Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
How are you?
Did you like hearing your message?
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, this is the guy who goes, awake from your torpor. Resume whittling.
Yeah, that's when I was worried about the aliens.
Yeah,
I was freaking out. I mean, it wasn't just Noah, that earlier caller, that was paranoid. It was the whole workplace was abuzz with this information.
Yeah, Mike, this caller is talking about the Milton Cooper document. He had to have a private conference with me on it between this show and the last show. But we had a caller earlier paranoid about it. It's certainly making its circuitry.
It just arrived from Hawaii on the fax machine. We got a hold of it.
Who did that? Who faxed it to you? You know?
No, it was actually, I was exaggerating. It was mailed to somebody to our connection.
Okay.
But anyway, I have to take credit for the two new callers tonight. I encourage them both to call up.
Well, thanks.
You're the one who said it was trickery, but in a positive sense.
Yeah.
Thank
you're the trickster.
Yeah, but I'm not just that, right? I don't specialize.
You're
right?
Asking me here.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking for a reassurance.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm not just a trickster.
Well, I can't play that game.
Okay.
Okay. My message, that was Buddhist scripture that you may have discerned.
Yeah, now, do you want to talk about that?
Just to say that it was a welcome to the Dalai Lama, who arrived today.
Ah.
Yeah, he'll be at Nathan Phillips Square tomorrow about 12:30.
So you planned that to be broadcast tonight for him, I see.
Sort of, yeah.
Is that from his writings or historical?
From 11th century, the 100,000 Songs of Milarepa. That was one part of one of those songs.
Milarepa.
Yeah, he was a rapper. Yeah, he wrote in poetry form.
That's interesting. Like the Maitreya and the Milarepa, this could be the hidden tradition of the consensus unfolding around rap. Could this be some oriental rhythmic retrieval and new archetypal intensity?
Yeah.
That's something to do. Oh, did you hear that? So thing I thought about, which is what I explained to the last caller as I listened to your message about the doer becoming the deed and the seer becoming the seen. Now, that merging of the observer and the observed has to include these new environments. Buddhism didn't deal with the new environments. They dealt with the divine animal of nature, right?
Well, what could possibly be new in it, though? In other words, how could it not be all-inclusive, the teaching, in as much as these guys are pretty together?
Well, when it's talking about, when it's talking about seeing and doing,
right.
And these are...
Here's the line.
No, these are anthropomorphic images. These are referring to man's body and his senses. If we don't know that our seeing includes print, or that our hearing includes radio and telephone, then our images that we're meditating on and buzzing and trying to destroy or come to terms with are incomplete. That's the cyberpunk image. The cyberpunk image is an attempt to catch up with machines as nature. It is rearview mirror, but it's an attempt, all right? Okay.
Right.
That's my point about it.
But you're saying that we have to turn off the media and come back to our bodies. That's where we all have to lead off from in the first place. We can't abandon our bodies. We can't leave our bodies.
Well, our new media are our bodies. So we want to go back to our old bodies.
That's a metaphorical use of the word.
Oh, no. I mean that literally, that when...